and welcome to Everybody A, Everybody Gay,
a queer exploration of Pretty Little Liars.
With your hosts, Speak Pirate, aka Joanna. I'm here, I'm queer, and I have a cat named Spencer.
And your other host, LCO123, aka Vina, a proud member of the Church of Vander Jesus. And tonight we have a third host.
Hi, I'm SJ. I'm a longtime listener, second time caller, and my wife's name is Allison, but not De Laurentiis.
It's probably a good thing, ultimately.
Yes.
Yeah, we're really excited to have SJ back with us tonight to talk about the one and only Allison De Laurentiis.
So much to say about her, really. I've always said she's kind of a Rorschach character. Like, what you see when you look at her says more about you than anything else, because she doesn't have, like the writers make her sort of be everything to everyone and, like, nothing to anyone at different times.
You could even say she's everywhere and nowhere.
So what do we think? Exactly. Let's start off with, like, who, like, what is each of our perceptions, like, what do we see when we look at Allison?
Oh, SJ, what do you see when you look at Allison?
When I see Allison, we've got to see a lot of, like, the progression of her, which is interesting, like, more so, I think, than some of the other ones. Like, we started with dead Allie, you know what I mean? You know, missing Allie. So we did gone Allie. We've had bad Allie. We've just gone through all these different stages with her. And for me, every time I kind of look at her, I always go to, like, is this the person that's, like, a product of, like, a bad environment in flight or fight mode? Or is this truly, like, a mean girl? And I always, always go back and forth with deciphering that.
I think that's such a great question, and, like, so much a question that's at the core of Allison is, like, is she just operating in survival mode, or, like, is this who she is at her core when she's being, you know, really cruel to everybody? I think when I look at Allison, you know, I mean, it's a cliche in the world of PLL to say it's complicated, but I think it's really appropriate with her. Like, she is a really complex character. And I think that she can have moments of being really sincere in her love for people and her affection for people and her protectiveness. And I also think that she can be really cruel and really manipulative. And I think that, like, both of those things coexist in at the heart of who Allison is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think those are both really good points. When I look at her, I see someone who's, like, who spends really the run of the show. And I think you could even maybe say, like maybe a through line that goes through to the perfectionists, is that she's someone who's always been trying to create a safe family for herself and never totally succeeding. Like, she didn't have it at home when she was growing up. She tries to rebuild it in a few different ways. And it never really works out for her. I kind of like the gone Allison. Like, looking back, I feel like that's the Allison that is very complicated and that has the most agency and is the most willing to kind of use her powers. And I think that one of the signs that the show starts to, you know, it starts to decline a little bit is when they start to really take away those elements of Allison. I feel like she's really at the heart of the show, and when you defang the character, you really take a lot out of the storyline.
I think that's really true. And, you know, Joanna, you'd posed a question which I think is a great one. It's like, what are the true core characteristics of Allison? What do we think are the things that are ultimately at the heart of her personality?
I think that she is a person who believes that the best defense is a strong offense. I think whenever she feels remotely threatened, she is going to kind of lash out or strike out. And I think that she's somebody who has a real fear of vulnerability. And so sometimes we see her lash out even at people who are close to her because it, you know, things are getting a little bit too real. I like to think that the real Allison is kind of like the somewhat softer one that we sometimes get in early seasons with Emily and with some flashbacks. I think that's kind of the person who Allison would like to be. And I think that Allison herself kind of gets at that sometimes in the later seasons when she talks about Emily always seeing the good in her. But I don't know. I think Allison in her heart worries that she's not a good person.
I think that's really true.
Yeah. I think for myself, and just to stay like straight up, I am totally an Emerson shipper. I have loved Allison from the beginning, but I really tried to look at this objectively with Allison, because I'll co-sign a lot of that, which I'm sure like that with Mona, Vina. But I mean, I really think that Allie, like at her core, you know, through most of the series, is she's selfish and vindictive and self-serving. And she has been kind and loving at times in the past and even like help people. But it's usually just in a self-serving way. And I just think that she was raised like that, plus years of trauma. I just think like exacerbated that flaw that she has. And, I really don't think she wants to be that way though, which is, I know some people might say like, oh, she's a sociopath or whatever and get into terms. But I don't think that she wanted to be that way. She just had a lot of misguided attempts. And I think Emily is really the only person that ends up truly being able to see through that wall. But if someone doesn't know themselves, it's impossible kind of to get to know them. And so I just really think when she collected all the girls for their different reasons, it's like the qualities she wanted in herself. So I think mm-hmm. that's kind of what it comes down to.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point. Something I really feel is at the core of Allison is that she's somebody who did not grow up with unconditional love. Like that she mm-hmm. always felt like the love that she experienced was very conditional. And as a result of that, I think she grows up believing that she doesn't deserve love and sort of questioning her lovability throughout the whole time that we see her on the show. And so I think that how that manifests in her personality is through a lot of sort of protectiveness, a lot of desire to kind of show off the things that she can do and be, a lot of self-preservation, a lot of self-loathing. And a lot of like intelligence, because she's always kind of trying to be a few steps ahead, because, you know, if it's sort of like she doesn't believe that the intentions of people are from a place of goodness, because that's so often been her experience. And so she's going to figure out somebody else's deal before they figure her out.
Well, looking at the inverse of that, like, so Allie is a person who doesn't necessarily feel like she's worthy of love, but there are so many people who will go to the ends of the earth for Allison. I mean, Emily obviously is willing to like meet her in dark warehouses where it might be Allison or it might be a serial killer or both. Allison might be a serial killer, you never know. Shauna is willing to like move up from Georgia to come and like help her on this spy mission that she's on. Noel Kahn is just like in it for the long haul in terms of like getting her fake passports and hiding her and everything like that. Like, what is it about Allison that is so compelling to these other people that they are willing to like go to such lengths in uprooting their own lives to try and help her?
It's that allure. She has this allure that captures people in some sort of crazy way, but a lot of her dealings end up that way.
Yeah, I think we see that she learned a lot of that too from her mother and from Cece, that certainly. Both of them kind of, yeah, have that quality of like, drawing people in, you know, spinning a good tale, that kind of thing. But I think a lot of it is about the mystery and about the way that she, the withholding that she does, you know, she gives people just enough to want a taste, and then she pulls back. I feel like a therapist would have a lot to say about Allison's messed up attachment style. But it's, I think that that is very compelling for people, and particularly people who, you know, kind of want somebody to believe in or want somebody to love.
And most people only see her in very small doses. So yeah. If someone says something cute to at a coffee shop one time, you know, you're going to have a different impression than someone you went to high school with who's, you know, not very nice. So I think she has a lot of these little one-off interactions with people that kind of build her credibility in some sort of way.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that.
So, Vina, you just like mentioned Cece, who is obviously a huge factor in, you know, really the shaping of Allison. How do you feel like Jessica and Cece, like Allison's mom and her, you know, secret for a long time, but still having kind of that relationship with her big sister, how do you feel like they shaped Allison? Who do you think she might have been without those people in her life?
That's such a great question. I think that they are both people who have like a really tough exterior. And even if they, maybe it doesn't seem that way at first, I think that they really do. They've got a strong spine and they've been through some shit, and they have this way of kind of being like, this is what, like, the world will tear you down. So this is what you need to present to the world to like survive as a woman, as somebody who like the world is going to kind of constantly undermine and try to take advantage of. And I think that in some ways they're sort of helpful lessons, but they're not like counteracted by, sorry, that was a cat. They're not counteracted by any other lessons. Like, they're not counteracted really by like how to, you know, softness and empathy and unconditional love, like I mentioned before. So it is a really interesting question. I mean, I'm certainly glad that Allison wasn't just raised by Ken, because that would have been horrible.
Oh my God.
I know. But I do think that like she got these really sort of twisted ideas about life. And the other thing is, I don't think that they were ever presented clearly. I think that like, you know, there's such horrible communication in the De Laurentiis family. And so I think that they were always, it was a lot of like reading between the lines at a very young age. And sort of, you know, like that scene that I think is in the Christmas episode where Jessica has the two dresses and she basically like gaslights baby Allison into being like, you never saw it. You never saw it. Like, this other dress didn't exist. And I feel like Allison's childhood, like weird stuff like that was probably happening all the time, right?
I think that one thing that is interesting is I think that with her mom and everything, like just the manipulation that kind of went on, I think that that really I think that the family was more or less a, let's react and then ask questions and figure it out on the back end. And I mean, the Hastings are like that too. So I think that she saw a lot of maybe aggression and quick to anger, and then things were, you know, discussed behind closed doors. So I think that she kind of had that reaction, but then never dealt with anything, you know, behind closed doors most of the time.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I feel like the thing, like things that run through Jessica and Cece, they're both characters who really, they have no limits. Like, they do not confine themselves to like polite societal boundaries. Like, Jessica is a character who has had a long-term affair with Peter Hastings, who is like born his son and passed him off as Kenneth's, but who will nonetheless like walk into the Hastings house and hit Veronica up for a check for the wedding dress fundraiser. Like, that is how Jessica moves through the world. And like, Cece is a character who is going to fake date her half-brother in order to get to spend time with the De Laurentiis family in Cape May. Like, these are not characters who like ever think to themselves, this might be too much. Is this too much? Yes. And so I feel like Allison kind of like takes that in, like she takes in that lesson that she's not going to like have the limits that like polite people do. And I also feel like it's ironic because Jessica and Charlotte both wind up being murdered, but Jessica and Charlotte are both characters who have a real knack for self-preservation. Like it's definitely something that both of them have like worked at and developed. And in that way, I feel like although Jessica dies and although it's really unfortunate that the show kills off Charlotte as well, I think that both of them would be happy that Allison at least absorbed enough of their lessons that she winds up surviving. Like she eventually then makes it out of Rosewood.
It is kind of stunning that Allison does make it to the end of the series alive. You know?
And I'm not sure Mrs. D or Cece would have cared, to be honest. I'm not sure that they actually cared, but yeah.
Fair.
It's a fair point. That's a fair point. Do we want to talk about some of our favorite Allison moments?
Sure.
Mm. Okay.
I'm going to say Candy Striper visit to Hannah.
Yes. That made my list as well. The truth isn't some shiny disco ball. Yeah.
That's one of the early times when we see Allison, when like you're not sure if she's real or not. And I feel like I really like Hannah's vision of Allison, like, you know, kind of caring, kind of mocking. You never really know what's coming next with her. I really like that one. And I also like her visit to Arya when Arya is drinking the poison tea that Meredith keeps giving her. And Allie has to kind of like talk her out of that. Those are definitely two of my favorite early Allie situations.
Yeah, those are great. Those are great ones. I included both of those. I love the lines that she has, you know why I picked you, right, to Arya. Also, you know, kind of continuing the, is Allie alive or is this a vision? The ghost waltz with Spencer when they're listening to, when they're at Radley. I love that scene. I also love when she saves Spencer from Ian in the bell tower. I love everything in the first secret where we get to see Allison's side of things and we see that she is simultaneously, you know, teasing and cruel and terrified. I love when she holds her breath to get what she wants in that flashback scene with Mrs. D. I love, of course, in A is for Answers, all of the stuff with Mona and their, you know, lost night at the Lost Woods. I think that's just so great. Allison in Shadow Play is a lot of fun. And then I'm sure we'll probably talk about these more when we talk about Emerson, but the scene when she visits Emily and says, you know, that she's alive and you know, when Emily says that she thought Allison was dead and Allison says, but I'm not, aren't you glad that I'm not? I love that. And I also love her scene with Paige in Paige's last episode. Those are some of mine.
Oh yeah, that one with Paige. That's an excellent scene. I love that one. We discussed that before. One of my favorite moments, if I'm going to point out one, is I love all of the big moments too. Just as far as you know, when Allie met Jenna. I mean, that was a fantastic scene. I could watch that all day for sure. There's all those ones, but Allie sometimes has some throwaway lines that I really like. And so I looked, it's episode 20, season 4. It's right after Ezra gets shot and they're outside that store kind of just figuring out who's going to be a decoy and what's going to happen and everything. Spencer's trying to over-explain what's going on. And Allie says, there's no art to this war, Spencer. To which she replies, you've read Sun Tzu. And I really like that because it's super simple. I feel like it says a lot. That Allie's just been playing this game for so long and the complexity in it that no matter what, she knows that none of this is going to end up being pretty. And I like that it touched on her intelligence, that Spencer was surprised. And I mean, at the end of this, you should never underestimate Allison De Laurentiis. That's for sure.
mm-hmm. Yeah, That's a great little, it's a small moment, but it says a lot about Allison.
Mm-hmm. It's such a small, small thing, but I think it says something about her for sure.
Agreed.
Yeah. Agreed. Absolutely. Absolutely. Do we want to talk about some favorite Emerson moments?
Yeah.
We talked about the warehouse meetup a little bit, but I really love, I love that for them. I love Emily being kind of dressed up. I love how Allison kind of like rushes into her arms. And when Allison does think that it's just the two of them, you do get a sense, like you do get a sense that it's meaningful to her. The things that she's saying about how, you know, you were the hardest one to leave behind. I missed you the most, everything like that. If I had to do it again, I would do things so differently. And then Spencer comes crashing in like a bull in a china shop, and Allison has to like, you know, dematerialize in the freight elevator.
Oh, that's, yeah, it's such a great scene. It's, it is, you know, it's, this is a time period when Emerson is allowed to be complex. They're allowed to be, I think it's a time when like their feelings aren't clear about each other, aren't totally clear about one another, but in a way that feels intentional versus later in the series when their feelings aren't clear about each other in a way that just feels like lazy writing. Mm-hmm. And I like that. I like that distinction. Yeah, the bedroom in the episode before that, the bedroom scene between them when Emily is so furious at Allison and so hurt, and Allison is just really, really vulnerable, probably the most vulnerable we ever see her. It's quite something. Yeah.
Yeah, one of the things I love is, I mean, we've got to talk about the hookup sleepover. I mean, we had paid our dues as fans, and we got, you know, a small snippet. Emily asked if Allie was sleeping. Allie turned around in bed after Emily kissed her. I always like to say, like, there is reciprocation there. And like we said, Allie uses a lure to get what she wants, and she's incredibly manipulative, but I actually don't see any manipulation in this particular thing. And then, yes, she later tries to kiss Emily when she lied about something else. But at this time of the actual sleepover, I don't think Allie had any like self-serving intentions. And we rarely see Allie vulnerable in the way that she is just unless she's with Emily.
Especially because, like, in the early days, there's sort of this lore that Allison has all these guys who are, you know, on the line, like Ian and, you know, her various men that she might be running manipulations on. But when they do, like, later when they do the take backsies for all of that, like, oh, no, you know, she never had sex with Ian when they were at Hilton Head, and no, she never did, like, as far as we know, Allison has never previously in the show actually had sex with someone in order to try to manipulate them. So I totally agree. It would be out of character for her to take it that far and be that vulnerable just for like the purposes of trying to manipulate Emily.
Yeah, I think for like maybe not the first time, it's unusual that Allison actually feels like a teen girl and not like the mm-hmm. you know, wild hyper ninja, like flying plane.
It was a high school moment. It was a high school yeah. or college where it's exactly. just a regular moment that you have in town.
Yeah. And there's a real sense of maybe there's uncertainty, but there's not, like you said, SJ, like there's not manipulation. Like the uncertainty is just from the fact that they're kind of feeling each other out. And this has been, you know, such a long time in the making, and there's been so much hurt and confusion and all of that. Like that is all at play. It's not like it's suddenly a really simple scene, but I think that their desire for one another is very clear in that scene.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Another yeah. scene that I really, really like is, if we can talk about later episodes, we're good to talk sure. about later episodes. Yeah. Okay. That it's the conversation when Allison calls Emily from jail. Mm. I really, really like that. That's another super kind of, to me, throwaway scene that maybe wasn't as necessary. timed it. It's 1 minute and 30 seconds. I wanted to know how long it took because Allie, she called Emily and it's just, Emily was standoffish. But I mean, as soon as she started talking to Allison, I mean, you know, she softened up and everything. And then, you know, Emily realizes that she needs to be there for her, and Emily will always be Emily. And that's why she's known as the loyal one. And that's why I like that scene, because it shows kind of Emily's always going to be that compassionate and always come back. And I just really liked that. They even bring up the weather, which is so mundane.
Oh my God. Is it raining there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That the Allie in jail stuff, there's a lot of interesting stuff happening for Allison during that time period. It's really the last time I think that Allison is like gets to be a complicated character in that way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a good one. You know, another really small Emerson moment. And honestly, I can't remember whether I actually like the content of this scene or if I just like the song that's playing in the background. But it's in season 7 after Allison has been attacked and rescued by Emily for the 11 billionth time. And they are back at the De Laurentiis house and they're like going through old records and they put on I'd Rather Go Blind by Etta James, which is like one of my favorite songs. I love that song. And there's just this real, there's a sense that there is an intimacy and a sort of comfort between the two of them, even after everything, even after the 5 years forward. And it's not necessarily played as a romantic thing, because the show is very, as we've talked about and we'll continue to talk about, like very weird about portraying their romance post time jump. But mm-hmm. there is a sense of the love and the care between the two of them.
Falling into old habits.
Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I definitely, I mean, we've talked about it before, but the whole interaction with Paige in Paige's last episode, I think is really, I mean, it's so sad that like the most honest Allison ever is about her feelings for Emily is like not with Emily. But I think it's a great summation of Allison's, both her fear of being loved, what it means to be loved and what it means to love, and her desire for that with Emily.
Yeah, and I think that that's a great, like, it's such a good arc for Paige as well, and for Paige and Allison together. Like, you know, given that we've seen Allison be about as awful to Paige as we've seen her be to anyone, and, you know, in the flashback scene, and then for them to, like, kind of come together and have this moment where they're both saying, like, yes, we are two adult women who have been in love with Emily Fields for most of our lives. And like, what are we going to do with that? I think that that's really good. And I also feel like Allison in the later years, like post trial, during the sort of like less complicated, more Hausfrau period, I do feel like Allison is still very motivated by what kind of reparations she feels like she owes to people. And I feel like she's able to have that conversation with Paige because Paige is someone she's been so awful to that she feels like whatever Paige wants from her, she has to go with it.
I really like that because it was really, the writers did justice to Paige. I mean, I don't want to be a Paley ship or anything, but for Paige McCullers, the character, they did her justice and I really appreciated that. I really, really just liked that scene. And there's another little point of it that I like that just shows the kind of progression is at one point when Allison apologizes to Paige in Emily's bedroom, she says, like, you were a terrible person, you know, and she says some other mm-hmm. things. And then when she says the speech to when she's talking to Allison, she ends up saying, like, you're a terrible person. I'm sorry. Someone that did terrible things. So she corrected herself. And I just think that is just it's interesting even just from that standpoint. We've seen a lot of different stages of them, but it came full circle. And I feel like that was really a fair way they did it.
Oh, I agree. One of the other little parallels that I love in that scene is Allison is sort of shying away from the conversation. She doesn't want to say more. And Paige is like, you know, basically like, come on, say it. Like, just what would happen if you told the truth? And I love the way that that echoes Emily and Paige's initial, if I say it out loud, if I say I'm gay, the whole world is going to change. And the idea that, like, all of these years later, Paige is Grace Allison at one point extended to her. Like, it's just, I think it's really a beautiful full circle moment for that whole trio, even though Emily technically isn't in the scene.
Mm-hmm. But she very much is. Totally feels like she's there.
Yeah, she looms large. She's the unfelt presence in that scene. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I definitely think that was one of Allison's best, like, you know, monologues or best things. I feel like that was one of her best.
Yeah, it feels like Allison is being more honest there than we've seen in a lot of other Allison scenes, where the writers, you know, the writers kind of do that thing where they're always holding out, like, the possibility of, oh, but what if Allie's evil? What if Allie's A? What if Allie is? And I kind of think that's one of the reasons that they didn't go all in on Emerson post-jump, is because they always wanted to, like, you know, Emily's one of the heroes, and so you can't have her dating somebody who still might be the villain. So, you know, they constantly had those scenes post-jump of, like, someone opens a door and Allison is just, like, standing there behind it. Like, she's just constantly, like,
yeah,
lurking in doorways post-jump, as if maybe she was just about to knock or maybe she was listening in. And so I think the real strength of that scene with Paige is that you're near enough the end that they've decided Allison is not evil. Allison is going to be real, and she's going to be real here with Paige.
Yeah, it's almost like, I mean, I really feel like once they brought Allison back, they were kind of like, they didn't really know what to do with her. And so the default mode was often like, is she bad? Is she not? You know, is she working against the liars in some way? And I do think that that might point to one of the reasons why she wasn't in the dollhouse. I think it's simultaneously keeping her a little bit separated from the liars, but also inviting the possibility that maybe she had some hand in putting them there.
Mm.
You know, that was, I don't know. The dollhouse is such a fraught topic in terms of
I actually think that Allie was, I think she was meant for the dollhouse. I mean, we saw that they were preparing for her. Mona was kind of the replacement. I think it was just easier to get the four girls at once, and then get Allie. And or A knew that Allie would be tempted to come and find the girls and, you know, would eventually come and find them. That's certainly possible. But I definitely think that was the plan. A's problem was they should have never let Mona and Spencer in the same room. If they would have kept Mona and Spencer apart and gotten Allie, everyone would have been there long term. And so it's good that it didn't happen like that. But that ended up being the the downfall of everything.
That's a really interesting point. I've never really thought about it from that context. But yeah, that was, I mean, yes, A's first mistake, letting Mona and Spencer have any interaction. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, you don't really think about it until after.
Yeah, honestly, if getting out of the dollhouse relied on Hannah, Emily, and Aria together in combination trying to, like, spring themselves, it would have been a much longer term plan.
Yeah. That is probably true. What about Joanna? Did you have any thoughts about why Allison doesn't end up in the dollhouse? Because I know that was something you brought up.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I feel like Allison not being in the dollhouse, like, the liars had already gone through so much together before Allison returned, that they already wound up having a bond that was stronger sometimes with Allison not included. Like, mm-hmm. even though when they started being friends, Allison was really at the center, And even though her absence was still centered a lot of the time, once she was back, she was so different and they were so different that they already were kind of a stronger unit without her in the mix. And I feel like once they come out of the dollhouse, that really is cemented. That the four of them have just like bonded so extensively through the trauma that they have endured, that Allison is always going to be a little bit on the outside of that.
Yeah, for sure. So why did Allison pick each of the liars? Why do we think?
I think it's exactly what SJ said earlier, that they all represent things that Allison kind of wants to have, you know, like elements of her personality that she wishes were more present. And then she kind of like chooses them as her proxies almost.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you just do the quick, you know, Spencer smart, Hannah admiring, Arya compassionate, Emily loyal, you can see how she could prey on each one of those things. Preying on Spencer for being ambitious. I mean, that's definitely a way. And then preying on, you know, Arya's emotions. Like, she really, you know, was able to pinpoint that. However, you just can't pull, like, a smart girl from her friends and make her yours. So she not only had to find these people with these qualities, but she also kind of had to find insecure loners or people that didn't have a whole lot of friends for the group to be complete. And then, you know, those are the traits that she, you know, desired for herself. And just, I think, instead of being those things, she surrounded herself with those things. And I think that the group was definitely, it was calculating in the way that she made it, but I think it was also coincidental. I think if she would have found some girls that met some of this criteria beforehand, we could have seen the group look a little different.
Yeah, like if it was like Cindy and Mindy and Bridget Wu. Oh, what would that show have been? Oh,
Bridget Wu, the spinoff that didn't happen.
Exactly. It would have been a lot weirder. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that, you know, obviously with Emily, it was this love, this unconditional love, this feeling lovable. With Spencer, you know, I think that competition between the two of them really made Allison feel something in a lot of ways. I think Arya in many ways is like who Allison kind of wants to be, and that they share this similar desire for sort of sophistication and, you know, being perceived as older or more cosmopolitan. And I think Hannah being so in awe of Allison really made her feel powerful. But I also think that there is something to the point that you make often, Joanna, which is Allison being a little bit in love with all of them.
I mean, I definitely think that Allison operates where, like you said, she doesn't feel like she's worthy of love. So she like throws a lot of stuff in to try to fill the void. Like, yeah. I think you could definitely say that Allison's a little bit in love with them. I think you could also say that Allison really likes having all of the liars, plus Shauna, plus Noel, maybe plus Jenna at different times, be in love with her. Like straddling the thin line between love and hate, and like generally coming down on the side of loving her.
Okay, so well, this brings me to a question. I mean, I know we've got some Emerson shippers in the house, but what are some other pairings that we like for Allison, if we can even let our minds go there?
Okay, so I'll start it out. So for me, if it was a male, I would say Noel Kahn.
And 100%. The
reason. Completely. A reason that I'm going to give is that he loves being reckless. He's super loyal if he wants to be. And that banter can easily be sexual tension. So that's my male pick. Do y'all have a male pick?
Noel was mine. Yeah.
Yeah, except no substitutions. It's got to be Noel Kahn, exclamation point after his name. You know, he's rich. He's handsome. He's, you know, he's kind of a ne'er-do-well. He's willing to do Allison's bidding, no matter what it is. So yeah, Noel is really the only guy, that we ever encounter as a love interest for Allie, who's even, I think, remotely worthy of her.
And on her level at all. Yeah.
I think they absolutely hooked up at some point. Like, I feel like that's heavily implied, if not stated, like that they something happened between them at some point.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. SJ, what about for a female pairing?
Okay, so I have two, but one, Mona. I mean, I just think if they weren't always in competition and, you know, Mona didn't get bullied or anything like that, I really do think there could have been a thing because we saw Mona's feelings for Hannah, which we, you know, like to talk about. I think she could have had those same feelings, you know, between Allison and Mona. So I think that's something that really could have happened.
I completely agree. My sort of one of my Allison hot takes I might get some pushback on is that I actually think that Mona is probably the character most suited to her of any character in the series, because I think Mona understands Allison better than mm-hmm. anybody does. I think she understands her more fully even than Emily by the end of the series. Like, I think that Emily has this idea in her head of like who she wants Allison to be, and Allison often wants to be that person. But I think Mona really sees all sides of Allison. And even though she's afraid of them, she's very clear about them. So, yeah, I for sure think Allison and Mona could have been something. And they have great chemistry. So,
yeah, I choose to act like the perfectionist didn't exist in my own world. But right, I mean, that chemistry between them and that show, I'm like, let's just focus on that, guys, the whole time. Let's just rewrite it. No mystery. Let's go from there.
Completely agree. That's a good take.
My bonus person was if the Jenna thing never happened, Jenna. Because that would have been amazing to see play out.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of tension between those two, for sure. For sure. For mm-hmm. sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I love thinking about Allison in other queer pairings, just because the show really paints her so heavily as Emily asexual. They don't really, like, get into her queer identity very much. And so I really think, like, Jenna would be a great match. I think that Mona would be a fantastic match, just because Allison can, like, grasp Mona's complexity in a way that, like, it kind of makes everyone else's head explode to really ponder it. So I feel like they're a good pairing in that way as well.
For sure.
But I can't really think of a lot of female pairings with Allison that I wouldn't go for. I've written an Allison Page fic before, because I think they have, like, as adults, they have interesting chemistry together. I often say that I wouldn't ship Melissa with anyone but Charlotte, but I could also see a Melissa Allison. They have kind of a love-hate thing going on that I think could be compelling. So yeah, just, you know, anybody who's going to be smart enough to try to be a match for her, I wouldn't say no to that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, and I feel like Allison and Shauna. Like, come on. Like, of course something happened between them, you know? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I kind of my headcanon actually is that Shauna was maybe the first woman that Allison ever hooked up with, like, during their summers in Georgia. And yeah, like that one to me makes a lot of sense. And I'm interested in sort of the past of their relationship. I also think before we knew that they were related, Allison and Spencer, that was a very compelling idea. And the idea that, like, a lot of their tension came from the fact that they were, like, both these really tortured queer girls who didn't know how to name their feelings, like, would have made a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. But then they're related, so that kind of squashes that idea.
Does it? It's Rosewood. Does it?
right.
I mean, in the Hastings, who's not related to the Hastings by the end of the show?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 But for sure. Yeah. Jenna, I think something happening with them around the first secret time period, that would have made a lot of sense. Mona for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Does anybody have any like Allie hot takes, like Allie unpopular opinions that they'd like to share?
Well, one of the things that we kind of like talk about with Allison is that she becomes like a really different version of herself, kind of like as season six, you know, the back half of season six, and when we're going into the post Dollhouse period, where she kind of becomes less of a master manipulator and more of a person who is interested in, say, dating police officers and taking them soup and, you know, like, you know, marrying like an obviously sketchy psychiatrist, etc. And so I think like one of the things to talk about with her is like, why does she do that? Why is she drawn to that? And I kind of think it's because she processes her trauma really differently than the other liars do. Like, mm-hmm. The other liars come out of the dollhouse, and no matter what happens, they definitely have that bedrock, like, they've got each other. Like, they survived that. They survived all the tests. This is, you know, this is them moving forward. I think Allison has to process a lot of her trauma in a really solitary way, and in a way that she's, like, she kind of winds up feeling like maybe all these bad things have happened to her because she in some way deserved it. So I feel like she tries, like, it's really heartbreaking to think of her as just trying so hard to just be a normal girl, to just live like this very normal under the radar life, so that, like, you know, the gods of, you know, terrible calamity will maybe pass her by.
Oh, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, Allison never got to sit in a room with Dr. Sullivan and talk to an empty chair. So she did not have the same ability
the
to
full kind of experience. Talk. She didn't have the full experience.
Right. That's kind of necessary when it comes to overcoming trauma in Rosewood, I think. Yeah. I like that a lot. I like that a lot. What about you, SJ?
One thing that I've been thinking about lately is just, I've always considered Allison the fifth liar. I mean, she was an original member of the group. She was in the promo ads. However, just recently I've been thinking about it, just if she is the fifth liar. I mean, and, you know, basically she watched her friends get tortured by an unknown person for 2 years. She didn't really intervene, provided little information, and she didn't really even return on her own accord. She was kind of, like, very forced by the girls. And they were just, like, always in a state of conflict, which wasn't the case with the other girls. So that's kind of something I've been thinking about lately. I mean, do you guys think she was the fifth liar?
I think that the show sometimes acted like she was, but I don't think they ever really knew how to put her in that role.
Yeah, the show almost doesn't have room for a fifth liar because they spend so much time establishing the dynamic between, like, the core four. And, you know, there were even times when it seemed like maybe Mona will join the group only to be sort of shoved out. Because the liars just can't handle that type of change.
Especially, I think, as the show became more sort of OTP focused. And so it was like you'd have the liars, but then you'd have like all of the boyfriends, too. And then it's like then you throw in Allison and whoever Allison's dating at the time. And it's like it's a full house, like that fills up the whole, you know, Hastings living room all of a sudden. Like that's just a lot of people to be writing for and like providing storylines and dialogue for. And I think that maybe similarly to the way that like they never really knew where to slot in the role of Emily's girlfriend, because it was like she wasn't Emily's girlfriend was never going to be one of the liars, but like she wasn't like one of the boyfriends, and they never could really kind of figure out how to market that person or like kind of put that person in a spot. I think Allison, ironically, you know, ends up being one of Emily's girlfriends, sort of, is kind of in a similar spot to that.
also the show treats her as really much more disposable than the other liars. Like, you never have an episode where it's just like, oh, Arya's out of town on a farm, or like, oh, Hannah has like left Rosewood to visit her dad in this episode. Like, you, it would just never happen. And yet, like, no matter how the show, like, no matter where we are in the plot line of the show, they still sometimes have those episodes where it's like, where's Allison? We have hand-waved her out of existence for, you know, the next hour.
We just can't deal with her today. She's somewhere. She's somewhere. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think, like, I feel like one of the things is that, I don't know if this is a hot take exactly, but I think Allison is a lot more interesting and likable when she's unlikable. Like, I think, like, complex kind of manipulative Allison is a much more compelling character than, like, the quote-unquote likable, soft, like, sweet Allison of the later seasons, you know, Hausfrau Allison, who I just think is not really very compelling. And, you know, I do think that Allison is manipulating Emily some of the time, not all of the time, but that I do think that that's something that's at play in their relationship, that it's not all one thing. I also think that Allison and Emily probably would have broken up no matter what. Sorry to say, but I kind of do, having thought about their relationship a lot and, you know, having watched everything that happened with their relationship, I kind of don't think that it ever really would have worked out for them.
Makes a lot of sense.
I rewatched the Pugprosal today, which is like the, you know, like this is... This is like, I remember at the time, like, there were like articles coming out that were like, Emerson gets the engagement they've always deserved, and, you know, stuff like that. I watched it this time, and it, you know, it starts out with like Allison is wearing her like gigantic pug sweatshirt. Emily is like putting kids' toys away, but in like a slinky sort of like man's shirt with no bottoms. Like, she's just like parading around the house with like her long bare legs. But like the moment they start talking, Allison's like, what happened? Why are you mad at me? What's going on? And Emily is coming in at like a 15 about like, what were you doing talking to my mom? I saw her give you something and you were whispering and she wouldn't talk to me the rest of the night. And I was like, oh my gosh, I think Emily might already be cheating on Allison. I think she might have been like meeting some women from Lex and saying she was at Pam's house. And then when she saw Allison and Pam talking, she started having this freak out that's been going for like the rest of the night because she's just so mad about it. And it's like, you're like living with this woman, you're raising children with her. It certainly seems like she might at some point have a reason to talk to your mother. Like,
yeah, right. And are you insinuating that Pam Fields has some sort of evil plan going on with Allie as well? I mean, you have to take that into account too. Like, if Pam's a part of the plan.
Yeah, they're just, that whole thing, and like, even I feel like a proposal in general, like, you know, it's fine, but like, you probably maybe should have like had some conversations at some point about like, how do you feel about marriage? How do I feel about marriage? How do I feel about our relationship? And if we might someday want to get married. It kind of seems like with that proposal, like, Emily still seems confused even when Allison pulls out the ring. She's like, that's my grandma's ring. Like, as if she said, like, did Allison do a jewel heist?
Well, also, like, they've now, I mean, they have been together for the duration of Allison's pregnancy. The twins are what, like, I don't know, like 6 months old at this point. I forget how old they are, but like, in all of that time, the topic of marriage has never come up. Like, they've been together for kind of a while in like a very serious relationship that involves raising children.
Like living together and raising children, like, full time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a wild thing. And I mean, the bangs, you know, like they're very present for Allison as well, which just adds insult to injury. Yeah, I think that is very, very possible.
And obviously it was straight people that wrote that, because gay people talk about it the first week. I mean, if you're a lesbian, there's the U-Haul jokes for a reason. They talked about it.
it's the whole construction of that. It's like they were in suspended animation for the entirety of Allison's pregnancy and the first few months of the twins' birth. And then it was like, nope, here, you know, there, which is actually kind of a change from how PLL usually does storytelling, where it's like a month has passed and that's shorthand for, you know, characters changing and growing. So yeah, it's a wild way to have them get married. It really is. And we never even actually see them married, because they're broken up by the time we get to the perfectionists. So, but we live in a world where the perfectionist doesn't exist. So
I just feel like we could come up with a million different ways than would have been better in a pug sweatshirt for the writers to write. Like almost anything else would have been cool.
Yes.
Instead of her just like handing her the ring and being like, we're engaged now. I mean, that would have been worse.
When I was in high school, I worked in a movie theater. And there was a guy who was trying to propose to his girlfriend, and he put the ring in the popcorn, but it's like dark inside the movie theater. And so she just like found something in her popcorn and came tearing out in the lobby to complain about it, like a foreign object in her popcorn. And then he was like kind of running after her like, no way. And that would have been better. Like that was a better proposal than the 100% pug sweatshirt and the being passive aggressive about Emily's mom.
That's at least a story. You at least get a story out of that, you know? Yeah. Oh man. So what are some like opinions that we've seen around that we do not like about Allison? Like some bad Allie hot takes.
Oh, the whole, she's a sociopath. I don't agree with that. I definitely feel like Allison has, like, genuine emotions and is capable of genuine feelings. She's just, like, she just hasn't always, like, been taught by her family how to express that and how to manifest that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think the idea that she's irredeemable is one of them. And also the idea that, like, in order for her to be redeemed or in order for us to be invested in her, she has to change and can no longer be complex or in any way unlikable. Like, she, all of the nuance has to be stripped from her in order for us to, like, get on board with the character or ship her with Emily or whatever, which is kind of how they acted by the end.
They kind of acted like, or, you know, people say that Allison didn't prove anything to Emily. I think that they were waiting for some sort of moment where, you know, Allie was going to be redeemed, which would be, that's just not something that it was possible at that time. And I think that just what you touched on with the sociopath is that unfortunately people really misuse and misdiagnose like bipolar and schizophrenia and all of that. And I've heard a lot of people use terms like being like, well, obviously she's bipolar. And so that's one thing that I don't like is, you know, I think we should steer away from that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think PLL's track record with mental illness, as we know, is not good. And I think that for sure extends to their willingness to throw around lots of different terms or people in fandom to throw around lots of different terms and not really consider that for sure. I mean, and I also think this is like in the show, this was in canon, but like the whole idea that Allison just had like these nice little platonic relationships with all of the men that she was hanging out with and nothing untoward happened at all. Like, they were all complete stand-up guys. I think that is a ridiculous, ridiculous notion.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'll see that, and I'll raise you the idea that, like, the thing that eventually makes Allison like that makes Allison worthy of this relationship with Emily and of marrying Emily is that they have kids together. It's like becoming a mom that makes Allie like a human. I feel like that's not my favorite either.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And also I think there is a thing in there about like Allison is worthy because she did not have sexual relationships with those men. And if she had, she would have been like, you know, they would have pinned a scarlet letter to her and like she would have been a shunned woman.
Well, and similarly, because she doesn't have an abortion, even though she was like implanted with these eggs against her will and everything like that, like that it's making those decisions that the show kind of uses to be like, no, Allison is a force of light.
Oh, completely, completely. Yeah. Yeah. That she's, yes, that she's, you know, a good girl. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Do we think that Allison has the worst post jump period? I know a lot of times we think that it's Spencer because she has to learn that her mom is not her mom and she gets shot and she like loses several boyfriends along the way. So Spencer has a really rough time, but like Allison like loses her sister, marries the conniving psychiatrist who is then going to betray her, commits herself to a mental hospital where she has to wear a Hannibal Lecter mask some of the time, and also, you know, gets impregnated with the eggs. And then, like, do we feel like overall Allie has like the worst life experience post jump?
I think so. I think that's safe to say. Probably also the laziest storytelling. Although Emily's pretty darn lazy too. Yeah. Well, I think that goes to another question, which is why doesn't she leave Rosewood during the time jump? Why does she stay? She's the only one who stays.
Presumably she originally stayed because of Charlotte, because of right. wanting to have a relationship with her. But yeah, once Charlotte is no longer around, that's a great question.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that there's something in there about her wanting to kind of plant her feet after being on the run for so long, but it's definitely not explored as like a character beat in a sense.
And I think that she might have still been trying to finish school because there's no way she would have graduated with the other girls. So maybe she stayed back to finish high school, or maybe not. They let her teach high school later on, but that doesn't matter.
It's a good point. There's a lot of questions about Allison's degree of education and like when or where she reaches that.
it's weird. I mean, I definitely agree that there's no way she can graduate with the other liars because she missed, like, she was dead for like all of junior year, actually all of sophomore year, right? Because it was right before sophomore year that she went missing. So sophomore year was the missing year. So she didn't take sophomore year. She didn't take junior year. She showed up again halfway through senior year. But, like, this is Allison. Certainly she could take the GED if Caleb could, like.
Right. The weird exam that they both take that's, like, the exam for her to get into school and the exam for him to get out of school, which is seemingly the same test.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. That makes sense. Allison never does go to Ravenswood, does she? She never spends any time there.
Well, I mean, unless she was, like, visiting the Grunwald.
Oh, true.
Yeah, she was there for sure. Just, I don't think we really saw it. But yeah. She was milling around those streets for sure.
I wonder if she ever got
pregnant. We do see her there, because isn't that where she runs into Mona in the boutique?
Also, is that where the magic show happens when she's leading...
And then Emily is in the sawmill. Yeah.
So yeah, she is there. So I wonder if there's a grave with her face on it there.
Could be.
She might have multiple graves. Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. What else do we want to talk about the complicated enigma that is Allison De Laurentiis?
One thing is that it's the big question, is Allison Emily sexual or, you know, has she been involved with other women? How serious? I think that that would be interesting to explore. And I have a take that might be unpopular. Okay. I think, I mean, just based on if I only had the knowledge I have right now, that Allison and Cece hooked up. I totally think that that would have been possible. And
interesting.
Yeah, I think that there is possible. And I'll tell you a couple of reasons. Because Cece dated Jason. So, I mean, we know that there was no stopping for there. So why would there be a boundary with Allison? You know what I mean? Like, what would stop her there? And another thing is Cece is definitely the kind of girl who would kiss another girl in line to, like, get into a club. And Allison was always at those frat parties and everything. So I just, I mean, there's no way to know that, but I just feel like proximity wise, I mean, that something is possible. And the way that, just the last thing, Allison gives her passport to Cece, just kind of when that was the only thing that she had at that time. That's something you kind of do when you're very emotionally connected to someone. And then later we kind of realize the relation, but I kind of think it maybe it happened.
You know, it's definitely possible. It's definitely possible. I think that there are so many unknowns about their relationship and about the various people that Allison, like, may or may not have hooked up with in the times mm-hmm. that we didn't see her, you know. It could be.
Cece, I hope it's not, but...
Right.
She's one of the only people we ever see Allison be in awe of. Like, true. Allison, like, you could definitely make a case for Allison having a lot of feelings for her, just because... We see how Allison reacts whenever anyone gives her, you know, attention and care. So, yeah,
that could absolutely be true. That could absolutely be true. I definitely do not think that Allison is just Emily sexual. I think that she totally has had relationships with women. I think that her biphobia, she experiences internalized biphobia, but it's like the show also is terrified of, like, naming her as bisexual. And I think mm-hmm. that, but I do think that that informs a lot of her character, her fear of her own queerness. And so I think it's actually a huge part of her that she just kind of siphons off into a little box.
Do you think she hooked up with any women during the jump period, when all the liars are off doing their own thing? Emily is bartending in California, etc.
I always like the idea that she and Emily did have some kind of fling during those years. Whether it was just, you know, they slept together once or they had something more substantial. I also think, let's see, when does Jenna become Jenna's not a teacher. Jenna becomes a teacher, like, in the second time jump in the finale, right? She's not already a teacher.
Yeah, she's, like, going to be life skills. It's like, I was going to say life sciences, and I was like, no, it's not that. It's stupider.
I mean, who among us can say we would not take Jenna's life skills class if given
100%.
The opportunity?
Oh my god, the life skills that Jenna could teach a person? Like, look out.
Oh, you would be unstoppable. But yeah, I was going to say if they were both teaching at the same school, I could see them hooking up. But I guess the timeline doesn't quite work out. Timeline? What timeline? Doesn't quite work out for that. Yeah, I think so. I don't necessarily have a strong feeling of who that would be. Do either of you?
No, I feel like it could definitely be a thing that happened that we just never get to see.
Yeah. Yeah.
I definitely think that she's kissed other girls and everything. I mean, pre and post jump. Just even when that time that she was gone, I just don't think she's had another relationship with another woman. And I just think that, especially on the run, I think that would have made her feel just way too vulnerable So I really do think that she's bisexual. The writers just did a terrible job at showcasing, you know, what that means. Allie was just lost for so long, and Emily was the only one that made Allie kind of be her authentic self.
Yeah, and made Allie want to kind of stand still and maybe, you know, put down some roots, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, are there things that we, like, either Allison storylines that we wish had happened during the series, or sort of, whether post the canon of PLL or post the Perfectionist, like things that we would like to have happen for Allison?
I'd like her to be out of Rosewood. The Perfectionist is not great, but I would like Allison to be, like, just not in Rosewood. I would like her to live in a house where no one has been buried in the backyard.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I think that would be really, really good for her. Yeah.
Like all the girls, I think that, my hope would be that she left or would leave Rosewood, because there's nothing holding her back. I mean, it's just she needs to sell the house. She definitely needs to start therapy, but not with Dr. Sullivan. She needs to get someone else.
Yes.
And I actually think that she would do better in a career where she doesn't have to be kind of a part of a team, something more solitary. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I just hope that they would continue their relationship, Emily and Allison. But being a teacher, man, I don't think that was the right career choice.
I feel like... they could have gone the route that Buffy did, where Buffy winds up being a guidance counselor in the last season of the show. Like, I feel like Allison having a situation where she gets to give advice to young girls who are trying to navigate the world makes a little bit more sense than her being, like, basically just taking over a job that Fitz has had and Ella has had and, like, so many other characters. Like, so many characters on the show have just randomly been teachers regardless of, like, any particular skill for it or, you know, aptitude.
I like the idea of Allison writing, like, novels or something, because I think she has stories, and it would be kind of the ultimate FU to Fitz, I feel like, that, you know, his muse now, it's like, she, especially if she was, like, writing novels about, like, creepy older dudes preying on young women. Like, I think that would be great. I would like Allison to get to a point where she feels like she can integrate all parts of herself without judgment, where she feels like she doesn't have to be Hausfrau Allie to be a good person, or kind of cut off parts of herself in order to be lovable or in order to love others. Like, I think her being able to kind of fully integrate a little bit better, much in the way, like, it's interesting because I feel like they did a really good job of that with Mona figuring out how to integrate different parts of her personality and still feeling true to the character. And they never quite figured that out with Allison, which is so interesting. But I think if she'd been able to do that, it would have been really great.
You know, I would love, here's the thing I would really like Allison, in the scene in the Fitzgerald Theater with Prezra, says that she thinks she would like to be an actress. And mm-hmm. I would love a version of, like, the post-time jump where all the liars are super successful, where, like, Allison is a really successful actress, Hannah is a successful fashion designer, Spencer is a successful politician, Ari is a successful novelist, Emily is, like, an Olympic swimmer. Like, I would like to see a version where they have all become really successful, but still have to, like, deal with the way that their previous issues and their previous relationships still, you know, confine their lives.
Yeah. It's like after all of the torment that they've gone through, for them to just have, like, almost ridiculous levels of happiness and success. I want that for them too, for sure.
But I also think that would be, like, interesting, like, if A does come back, like, to give the liars a lot more to lose. I think that would be, like, that would really raise the stakes in a way that the time jump didn't.
Yeah. That I think is such a weird sort of failing of the time jump is like now they're adults. And so theoretically the stakes should be higher and everything, you know, they should have more to lose. And then they just kind of don't. So it would be, yeah, it would be interesting if they were like more high profile or, you know, had more money or had more at stake there for sure. Yeah. Any like other thoughts or headcanons or just observations about Allison that feel important to us?
Just that as they like, as the show goes, like the show goes how Allison goes, like when Allison becomes less queer, the show becomes less queer. When Allison becomes a little more boring, the show becomes a little more boring. I think that she's like really the weather vane to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think that that's really true. Which is so funny because it's kind of like perfect, right? That Allison is like at the center of it all, and that like how she's treated kind of impacts the rest of the show. I don't think it was intentional, but it does seem to be the case.
I almost just feel like Allison was just larger than life when she wasn't there, but the writers just couldn't get her on screen when she was, I'm maybe not phrasing that the correct way, but just they had a really hard time boxing her in as a real living human being instead of just these, you know, kind of cool clips, you know, from the past.
Oh, I think that's totally true. I mean, in the same way that like, Allison is alluring to people when she's withholding herself. I think the writers make Allison alluring when they're sort of withholding her from us. And we're just getting little bits of her. And that's why, you know, I've said before, like maybe Allison should have died or shouldn't have come back, because it does seem like, you know, not that I would have wanted them to kill off another queer woman, but that they just did not know how to get a handle on her.
All in all, I know, SJ, you said like you're still an Emerson fan, and I really still am too. I mean, even though I agree that like in the real world, these two characters probably would have not lasted for the long haul together, I really appreciate that Emily Fields was like one of the first main characters on television who got to be queer. And I think it's hard to argue that like what Emily wants is to be with Allison. And I'm glad that she gets that. Like, I'm glad that her ending is that they get to be endgame together.
Yeah, I agree with that. And if you're in a relationship and you are bringing out better qualities in that person, I mean, then be in a relationship. And that just happens to be between Allison and Emily, I feel like, because there's those differences, but they do really bring out the best in each other. So it's like kind of complex looking at it that way through that lens.
Yeah. And I feel like Emily needs a partner who's a little more savvy about the world.
Definitely.
Yeah. I also think it's, you know, it is significant that like, this is a show, you know, whether or not Allison is the fifth liar, like eventually she's sort of treated that way. More or less. And the fact that two of the liars are queer and end up together, that's a big deal. You know, that is significant. The fact that Emily, as you know, is this queer teenager and we get to see her journey and that she like gets the girl in the end, like that matters. So I do think, despite my many, many gripes with how it all came together in the end, that there is a lot of significance in the two of them ending up together. Almost more on a like meta societal level than even within the show itself, but I like it from that standpoint for sure. And that, I mean, I think it says something about like the fact that there was such an Emerson fandom and that there was this, you know, so many people who wanted Emerson to be endgame. Like that speaks to a real power in queer fandom that did not exist years ago. So that means something.
Oh, this is a question that like just occurred to me just now. So I don't really have a great answer for it in my head, but
okay.
Why do you think straight fans liked Emerson so much?
Mm. I have a lot of theories about this.
Share them, please.
I think that Allison is very femme and not really, I think it's easy to not read her as queer in the way that the show constructs the character, and if you're not looking for it, versus a character like Paige, who I think is feels very queer all the time, is presented in, you know, she's Paige. She's like awkward gay Paige. Like she's presented as this very just queer character. That her appearance is more like sort of traditionally queer than Allison. Her interests are like her love of Emily is like very relatable, I think, to a lot of queer fans, but like maybe less relatable to straight fans. I think that there is a comfort in this idea of sort of two women who kind of read as straight being paired together in the same way that, like, you know, two women making out at a party is not threatening. In the same way that, you know, two straight actresses being in, you know, lesbian porn is like not threatening. Like, I think that there is this comfort in that, that a character like Paige does not provide.
Paige, all you had to do is put a tie on her and then she just automatically looked gay. It was a little harder with Allison. I mean, I had already been out for years when I started watching that show. But one thing that I think is really relatable is I think most people ended up just shipping one of the four main couples. I mean, that's what happened. But I think it touches on being in love with your best friend. And I think so many of us, gay, straight, not, fell in love or whatever, or had feelings for a best friend. And the other Liar's relationships came in as love interests, whereas Allison was a friend first. And so I think that that might be relatable to other people. But I'd have to go find some straight people, so.
That's a really good take.
Yeah, that is a good take, that it's a little bit more of like, it's like a template that people are maybe more comfortable with or feels more relatable to them. Yeah. Do you have a theory, Joanna, or
I don't know. It's like I was kind of feeling like maybe because Allison, we like one of our criticisms of it is we don't really get to see Allison have like a queer journey necessarily. Like the show just frames her as Emily as sexual. But maybe it's like all of those like ostensibly straight girls who like say things like, oh, I'm so straight, but I would totally like, you know, I totally have like a girl crush on, you know, like whoever, like just this one super hot girl who, you know, I would totally bang, like just if the situation just like presented itself to me, like if I just suddenly found her naked in my bed and there was just nothing that could be done, like those women who want to like have that feeling but also categorize themselves as not gay, like maybe Allison speaks to them.
Oh, that's a really interesting take. Yeah, like gay for Emily is like the equivalent of being like, you know, oh, I'm gay for ScarJo or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or like Ruby Rose is like a big.
Sure. Yes.
If it just happened that I got impregnated with Ruby Rose's embryos and we decided to like raise these children together in my house where many people have been murdered, like if that happened, then who can say?
The amount of quote unquote straight women who are like would be totally down for anything to happen with Ruby Rose is really a very interesting phenomenon. Yeah.
Whatever happens. I mean, yeah, that's I'm sure on everyone's elevator list. I mean, yeah.
Oh, that is funny. Yeah. No, I think that that's a really and you know, it's one of those things where like there are probably a lot of reasons that like feed into that, like why why that is, why there is like this comfort with Emerson and this discomfort with Paley. It was always really interesting to me when people were, you know, the number one thing that people would say against Paley is the head dunk that Paige, you know, Paige tried to kill Emily and all of that. And
yes, I say it all the time online. I'm just kidding.
No, I know. But like back when this was all happening, there was like a large contingent of people that were like very, very upset by that. And I totally get being upset by that. Like physical violence is never a thing that should be happening. But like Allison did a lot of really fucked up things to Emily too. And like, I don't feel like Allison, you know, is automatically like a, you know, perfect shining example of a partner for Emily, as opposed to Paige. So I like them both to be able to exist in all of their complexity for sure.
Yeah. If Allison was like on the lesbian and fit into a category, you know, femme, you know, chapstick lesbian, what do you think she would fall into? Well, like Allison, she never fits into any category.
That's sort of how I feel. Like, I sort of feel like she would have like one look or one attitude for a while, and then she'd like show up, you know, in a new state with like a shaved head and, you know, a bunch of tattoos and be like, this is my identity now. You know, she's kind of like Mona in that way. Like she can wear a lot of different masks and a lot of different faces. And I think is really good at giving people the version of herself that they want to experience, you know?
Mm-hmm. What's the thing that she says to Emily, the hot in the sheets thing?
Oh, shy in the street, sexy in the sheets?
In the sheets, yes.
Yeah, something like that. I feel like, you know, you might look at Allison and feel like, oh, she's just going to be like kind of a pillow princess kind of a thing. But I think that she is, I think she's probably a woman who knows what she wants.
I would agree with that. I think that she, yeah, like maybe plays coy, but she's, yeah, she knows how to get business done. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Allison De Laurentiis. She is a complicated person. I'm trying to even remember how her arc on The Perfectionist ends, and I kind of don't, and I'm kind of okay with that. I think she's divorced and like.
Oh, well, then there's that glimmer of hope because Emily is, like, calling her on the phone. Because, of course, we all know that, like, once you've decided that you wanted a divorce and have, like, gone to lawyers and had papers sent over and everything, still a single, like, conversation on the phone is probably going to be enough that just, you know, patches it all back up.
Totally. Well, I feel like there was also an extremely faint glimmer of something between Allison and Taylor, I want to say. The girl who was like kind of the Allison of the
perfect. Oh, they had some good chemistry together too. That's true.
And Taylor, like, she did something gay. Like, she fixed a tire or, like, wore a backwards hat.
She did, and she wore a jacket that was really gay. Like, she was in a gay jacket in a lot of her scenes.
Okay, so, yeah. That tracks. Okay, well, do we have anything else we want to say about Allison De Laurentiis?
I mean, there's always going to be more to say about her, but I think we have really like given a 360 look at her, and she's a tough character to get a handle on. So
yeah, we've covered the spectrum for sure. For sure.
Allison's the girl nobody can stop talking about.
Completely. That is such a perfect summation of like who she is. Like, yeah, there's always more to discuss. And that's, I think, how she would want it too. She'd want us to be talking about her.
That's immortality.
exactly. Well, if any of y'all out there have thoughts about Allison De Laurentiis or anything else, you can, of course, send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can also check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast or send in a rating and review on iTunes. We would appreciate it. SJ, thank you so much for joining us today. You are welcome back anytime. We love
hearing you. Thank you for having me again.
Oh, our pleasure. Our absolute pleasure. And how perfect for you to come talk to us about Allison, because you not only have a wife named Allison, but you have a lot of great thoughts about Allison the character. So
thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, till next time.
Take care. We'll be right back.